Welcome to Worker Movement, a podcast dedicated to the working class, a podcast dedicated to raising class consciousness. This podcast is for you, for us, for the worker.
The storming of the Capitol was planned in the open, on the internet, and literally everybody but the people in charge of security at the Capitol knew something was going to happen. Since the storming, many corporations have cut off financial support to right-wing movements. Amazon, Google, and Apple did their part to kneecap the conservative clone of Twitter called Parler. Everybody is aghast that these internet companies are now banning conservative speech. What should be done?
There's this conflation between, you know, the Constitution and the internet somehow being the same, and that Twitter and Facebook are somehow government entities. Now, that means that they just admitted it to fascism, but at the end of the day, you don't have a First Amendment right on private property. Like, you don't have the right on Facebook's private property to say what the hell you want. Because even if they're not held accountable, it's still their private image, and they can do whatever they want to. So that's the first thing. So people don't really understand what liberty is. At the end of the day, these corporations exist to make money for stockholders, not to make sure that the right wing has any type of platform they could do messaging on.
And the fact that they're creating a platform that the right uses to organize is incidental in their profit making, and they genuinely don't care.
They don't care. They have no feelings. They don't give a shit who uses it. It only becomes a problem when their other users begin to bail, and that's really what it comes down to, is when enough people on their platforms begin to deplatform themselves, just organically stop using Facebook, that's when Facebook responds, because they're getting ahead of the negative publicity from it. Because remember, Facebook didn't stop any of the advertisements that were negative. They didn't stop any of the messaging. They have algorithms. It's not that hard to write AI that can scan for hate messages. It's all trained. They have people that reported it. They can train this data sets. They have huge machine learning data sets using LSTMs to predict what comes next. They know what's going to happen. But they didn't give a shit because it made them money. Because there's right-wing advertisers advertisements being paid for on their platform. And if they try to deplatform the people that these go out to, they lose the ad revenue.
So Facebook isn't going to go out of their way to create an algorithm that causes them to make less money. So before we go any further, what's an LSTM?
An LSTM is a model we use in deep learning or machine learning that we can begin to predict what comes next based on the probability that it's already occurred within a training set. So the example you see every day is that Google uses it when you start to type in the search bar. It begins to pull up your searches for you and what it thinks is going to be the next search. And you see a little bit of humor in this error when in Wreck-It Ralph breaks the internet when he's trying to ask a question. And that little library guy begins to answer before he's ready to hear the whole question. So when it comes back to like natural language processing, Facebook already has gigabytes of data that people have reported as hate speech. They can train these models against that and begin to search for those same patterns within other hate speech and effectively flag something as being hateful and then go through and monitor it.
So it's purely a choice by these large social media companies whether they want to proactively go out and filter certain speech or not. It's a capacity that they have, and they're choosing not to do it, at least until we saw the storming of the Capitol happen, and then they decided that we have to draw a line somewhere because it's a problem.
Yeah, and let's say a different way too. If Facebook can predict who you are when you're 10 years old, Facebook knows who the majority of the people that stormed the Capitol are that weren't wearing a mask. They already have your face hashed in their system. They could have just literally flagged those individuals as domestic terrorists who were at the Capitol on their accounts and turn them right in. No questions asked, because that technology already exists. That's how it can recommend your friends to you in there. If they really gave a shit, they would have already been proactively, you know, out in the media identifying people. But they don't give a shit because they don't want to be seen as a platform that's unmasking the terrorist groups who are using their platforms to help them make money. It's not a conspiracy. This is legit. This is how it works. They can do this technology. It's not that hard.
Facebook was probably the platform under which a lot of the real-time videos were recorded. And Facebook presumably has the data stored because you can go watch the video on Facebook. They likely could have done a real-time facial recognition of everybody in the crowd in real time and provided this information to the FBI if they so chose. So the FBI coming out with these shitty low-resolution video screenshots saying, we don't know who this person is, can you help us? They know.
They have to know. There's no way they don't know. That dickhead has his GPS location on site. The Stingrays already know who was on site. All your unencrypted text messages were already recorded. You gave the GPS locations to Facebook. Facebook used everybody else around you to coordinate who you were based on background images. You uploaded images and you commented on multiple DNS leaking applications on your phone. I don't care if you installed Signal to communicate. Every other device on your phone is leaking DNS information everywhere in your location and you are found. If your phone is not off in an aluminum bag in your car and smashed with a hammer, you were tracked.
So what's a Stingray?
Oh, a Stingray is this wonderful device that the government or whoever wants to use one that can afford one has that basically mimics cell phone towers. So it's basically a man in the middle attack that you connect to the Stingray. It pretends it's a cell phone service provider. It still forwards it on to the actual cell device, so it doesn't, you don't notice that you're being monitored, and all of your data that's passing into the cell tower is actually passing and recorded into the Stingray. So anything that's not encrypted, like the packets that have like, "Hey mom, I'm at the Capitol getting ready to storm it," like that's all been absorbed and they have those messages. All your emails and all everything that's not encrypted, they have everything.
And the most benign use of a Stingray is to effectively locate where your phone physically was within a relatively small triangulation area based on cell tower readings. So when you connect to a Stingray, there's a log of your phone, which is your phone connected to that Stingray, which places your phone in a, I'm going to say, a 2,000 square foot radius.
Not even. Holy shit, not even. I'm going to put it down to the inches. You're going to be attacking, you're going to be attached to three towers at a time, plus your GPS coming in there. It's using triangulation all around you to know where you are. That's how triangulation works without GPS.
Because there's 100 Stingrays in the Capitol area, right?
There's a Stingray in every building, and there are cell towers in every single building. So if you attach to the Sprint mobile booster that's in the Capitol because you're fucking cool and you have Sprint or Verizon, they already have your location. They know the MAC address of your phone. They know the SIM card location. It's kind of hard not to, like, not, like, track you. Like, they tracked you.
Law enforcement agencies know literally every single person that stormed the Capitol. And they probably can draw paths as to where you went.
They can draw paths because they can do it in airports. They can say that this person goes here, 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 and here. And they give that data out so you can try to most effectively put routes to restaurants and kiosks and stuff. It exists. None of this is a hard problem. This is all the solved problem that is actually in production right now. I'm getting so excited because it's so funny.
But the real enemy here is Google, Facebook, and Amazon because they decided to no longer host the conservative Twitter. They're the bad apples. And there seems to be a lot of people online that don't comprehend that it's not their job to platform or deplatform or whatever. These companies do not give a shit. This has just become a problem for them.
It's just a negative PR thing. It really is. They don't care. And when I say it that way, I'm being honest. Like, they don't care. It's just negative. So how do we prevent companies from being, I guess, I don't know, targeted by the government for allowing these platforms to exist? There is a rule that actually allows Facebook and Twitter to keep these assholes on their platform because they're not held liable for the content that's created on their platform.
So this is Section 230. Of the Telecommunications Act of 1996, which was originally lobbied for by AOL, and the effective section that's relevant, and I quote, "No provider or user of an interactive computer service shall be treated as a publisher or speaker of any information provided by another information content provider." So this effectively provides immunity to any social media network or any other website that allows a third party or a user or a human being to post content to their website. So if I write on some website, "I hate people that have an E in their name," to my knowledge, that isn't hate speech because people with an E in their name aren't a protected class, and the expression isn't a statement of intent, so it doesn't rise to a higher legal threshold of clear and present danger, which would require action. The website likely has no liability in this situation, but there is some legal nuance to this. What happens in practice is that the website moderates this content to some threshold they deem moral or profitable. There is a class of speech that companies do have liability for, but the bar is much higher. Think of this as the internet equivalent of yelling fire in a theater.
Yep.
So there's various loopholes for this, and the whole act is lobbied by effectively telecommunications companies to create this immunity, and the immunity exists. So one of these grandiose ideas of the right wing is let's repeal Section 230. So what do you think of that idea?
I think it's like shooting yourself in the foot. It makes no fucking sense. I mean, what it really comes down to, and this is, I think, why they want to do this, is that the right wing keeps getting deplatformed because it's not good for business. And to teach the telecoms a lesson for making a business decision that goes against the ideology of the Republican base, they want to repeal 230 to make them be held liable so that they have to deplatform liberals. Because they think, like, supporting trans people or something is hate speech, and that's not very nice to them.
It's just what about it?
It is. It really is. It's like, well, they're doing it. They're saying that God loves, but we're saying God hates. I think that they should be banned. It's like, well, that's, you like, literally, you hate speech. Like, everything you said there is pure hate speech. Like, that West Cod Baptist Church, wherever it is, Westboro Baptist Church, shouldn't have a platform because they just stir up their base for pure hatred. And that's exactly what it is. I think it's a double-edged sword. They don't want to lose it because then, let's say that, you know, they get deplatformed on Twitter and they try to go to Parler, and now Parler has hate speech on there. So anybody can now sue them for damage. So no telecom provider would actually be able to be in existence because people can go on there and just basically bankrupt the entire company on lawsuits. It's almost like the frivolous lawsuits that come through just to get money off people who are willing to pay extortion. The same thing would happen to the social media, which, again, that's good. Who cares?
So during Bernie's attended filibuster of the defense bill,
yep,
McConnell came out and presented a bargain, which was, we'll repeal Section 230 in exchange for $2,000 in stimulus. Now, the Dems don't want this because they're largely representing big tech, and big tech wants this exemption. If we just step back and say, like, what do we want? Would we have taken that deal?
Well, I would have. I think there are a lot more people who would have benefited from the $2,000 than the tech companies that would have went bankrupt had people sued them for, you know, their hate speech that they allow in there. Now, it'd go to court. Somebody would figure out what the bar level of hate speech was. Would it be like yelling fire in a movie theater? That level? Would it be, I want to shoot everybody in the head, and they go to their house, they have guns? Right? Like, what's the liability? You hurt someone's feelings? You bullied somebody, you know, to commit suicide? At what level does it become? Do you just say that someone's car looks like shit? Is that a lawsuit? Or you embarrass somebody by posting a funny video of them falling on their face on the ice? Right? So there's a lot of ramifications to repealing it, but the bulk majority of the worker, the proletariat, who would benefit from the $2,000, doesn't give a shit about this law on protecting, you know, big business.
Do you or I give a shit if Twitter or Facebook can't exist because they have too much content that they can't moderate?
No, because
I don't give a shit.
I don't give a shit at all. In fact, we already talked about how there's big tech where they can already self-moderate. It's really the barrier of entrance to maybe a smaller company that doesn't have the technology, or maybe people begin to get around and circumvent the technology that causes it, and maybe they apply it to things like Canvas at school, and you can't have remote learning anymore, or they apply it to podcasts, and now podcast providers are unwilling to take edgy things, and it kind of has a small crippling effect on what free speech looks like. But at the end of the day, the courts are there to decide what that looks like. And I believe it all work its way out through litigation.
And one of the distinctions here that needs to be made is the difference between being a carrier and a content provider.
Yep.
And this Section 230 largely applies, and I'm not a lawyer, so don't like reference us in a lawsuit or something, but
they said, and I quote,
they said,
we're not a lawyer.
But you'd like want to redact that or something,
right?
Because that'd make you look bad. But there exists a situation where you are purely a carrier and you take whatever bundle of data and you just transport it from location A to location B. And not only do you not care what the content is, you don't actually know what the content is. So that's one distinction versus Twitter or Facebook, where you are aware of what the content is because your entire platform is people writing dumb shit and committing it to your platform.
Yep, and trying to get other people to commit dumb shit too.
If we draw that distinction, us as podcast creators would still have the opportunity to say, I would like to buy hosting from a carrier of data, and then we would incur whatever liability we would incur by putting up our speech, and that would be our liability.
Absolutely.
So we still have speech, but we have to spend some nominal amount of money to buy speech.
Yep.
Which you could argue isn't great, but the Constitution doesn't say that speech is free. It says that you have the right to speech.
And you have the right to speech, and the government isn't designed to hold it against you. It doesn't say that you have speech that can harm other people.
Or that you can speak so long as some corporation is figuring out a way to not have liability and allow you to be on their platform while they profit.
Yep.
That's not the First Amendment.
That's the First Amendment. Doesn't. Yeah. Nothing. None of that makes it there. And I think this comes back to the conflation between neoliberalism in the government, or what these institutions are, the CEOs of other companies, as a fourth, branch of government. People are finally waking up to this hostage taking that these other companies have done. So our entire, domestic policy creation is predicated on the fact that we can't disrupt capital. Who gives a shit if a company that serves nonsense out of their mouth or on their things goes under? I mean, does it really disrupt the world that you can't read someone's thought fucking process as they come out of their head because he's got the shower thought, blah, 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 blah. Please give me my upvotes.
Tweet, boom, retweeted. Oh my God, this is so exciting.
Here, let's have a flame war with somebody who I don't give a shit about, who's fake and has 27 other accounts.
Today, a bot upvoted my shit and it made me happy.
Yeah. Oh, wow, look, someone liked my thing of me that I purposely spent 6.5 hours getting the lighting right on my coffee as I put a fucking flower in my cappuccino. Who gives a shit?
I don't give a shit if Twitter goes under at all.
No, I actually kind of wish they would have done that. I wish they would have taken it.
I wish they would have taken the deal.
Take the deal.
We would be in a better place right now. And this would have arguably occurred before the storming of the Capitol, and you might make an argument that it would have been prevented. So the other arguments against repealing 230, we've already talked about them coming from the right, where it's, oh, you can't have this, otherwise we'd be deplatformed.
Yeah, good. Okay.
You have kind of our leftist take, where if you want to speak, why should a corporation be immune from what you say? Incur your own liability when you speak. Take the risk. If you want to say something, take responsibility for it. That's, pulling yourself up by your bootstraps, or it's personal accountability, or whatever the dog shit conservative talking points are. And then the most horrifying position on this is the neoliberal position, which is our communication is controlled by corporations and fascists are using it. Oh well, nothing we can do about it.
Oh well, we got to make sure the government stays out of the way of free markets. It goes back to the idea that the conservative mindset and ideology is super disruptive to the brain, and so is neoliberalism. The mental gymnastics you have to do to not only think that corporations are bad, but they're also good, but that they shouldn't have free speech, but they should, but they shouldn't. And to get to the argument point where we should deplatform the right wing, but only if the people want them to, not the corporations, is nonsense to me. It doesn't make any sense. Only if we get enough downvotes should we get them off the platform, or only if they offended somebody within the policy that we believe to be offensive should they be deplatformed. Only if we have this petition on change.now or change.org should they be deplatformed, if we get enough people to hate whoever it is. I don't care. Oh, just don't follow them. You don't like their content, don't follow them. Oh, we'll teach them that way. We'll deplatform them and they won't get any more advertisements. That's fucking just sick. Neoliberalism is a mind sickness.
So Twitter banned Trump recently. Let's advocate for that happening from these three different positions. So if you're a conservative, what do you think about Trump getting banned?
Oh my God, that's against the Constitution. Have you not read the Constitution? Point of view of the Republican Party, you're terrified that you're going to be deplatformed over and over again, and it's going to become normalized. That your quote-unquote free speech will be taken away, and it'll be a normal reaction from any corporation to just basically deplatform you on the spot. They don't like you, you're not going to be able to talk. Your candidate, you're going to be gone, because they basically got rid of a sitting president. Regardless of whether or not he won or lost, he's still a sitting president, and they went through and they got rid of him. And so from the Republican side, it's a normalization of muting out the conservative hate speech.
And that's a problem that the conservatives feel the need to solve, and they don't have an answer for it other than to just scream and yell about how corporations are bad and it's all a rigged leftist mainstream media, whatever.
Ooh, I like that one. Forgot about that. I forgot about mainstream media. The other part about all this, too, is you can also make a shitty, I don't know, what do you call that thing, parlor, and then self-dox yourself.
Have it be so insecure that people actually proactively upload their driver's licenses to an unsecured, publicly accessible API that somebody can just scrape.
One.
It's just dumb beyond
user
words.
Two, user three, And how do you know they're verified? Because Parler verified them for you. In fact, I think there's a geolocation, quite literally, online where you can see all the addresses of Parler users on like a heat map in the United States. And you can zoom in to like your address and see if any of your neighbors were on Parler. Because they leaked all that data out.
Just the dumbest people.
That's the fucking dumbest people.
They're just not even marginally intelligent.
Oh, in order to stop bots from coming in, you have to... It's like, get the fuck out of here. Whatever.
And then people uploaded their license. Like,
I think they should have did social security number and license, just to double check.
I think they did do social security number for some stuff.
That's so fucking awesome.
It's so dumb. Like, if you were making a honeypot, this would be it. So conservatives are all spun up that large media tech companies are effectively censoring their speech and they don't know what to do about it. So their reaction is, we need to repeal Section 230. That's a reactionary response. From a certain point of view, Twitter can do whatever the fuck they want because they're a private corporation. And I think everybody involved knows that. Capital knows that. Capital has no interest in repealing Section 230. From the neoliberal mindset, there's all this concern about how, well, if we allow companies to start censoring stuff, when are we going to stop? And it's like, companies can already censor whatever the fuck they want. This is a problem that's existed forever and ever, but your entire worldview seeks to give corporations more power. So, like, if A, then B is a very linear cause and effect that neolibs just have no capacity to address.
Well, it's also pretty funny because Twitch got rid of leftist, you know, streamers who basically said we have to seize private property, and that was against Bezos' idea of what capitalism should be. Right? They've already doing that. YouTube actively promotes right-wing ideology, not because they care, but because they get better, like, you know, advertisement out of it. They don't push leftist ideas out there. They actively, you know, support the right-wing conspiracy theories because people watch them over and over and over and over again. There's a reason why people believe in chemtrails, because the information is readily available. There's a reason why PragerU is allowed to exist, because they pay money for advertisements to get new users. The left doesn't do that, because the left is always broke.
And they spend their money on stupid shit.
Yep.
If we're going to look at this from what would be a leftist perspective on Trump getting banned from Twitter, my view is that Twitter shouldn't have banned him. Twitter has no liability because of Section 230. And the best hope we have of creating accountability for Trump is to basically let him talk and say the dumbest shit possible and have some lawyer have to go through and scan or print and like format on some stupid ass exhibit sheet every one of his inane, insane tweets advocating for violence in some lawsuit. Like, that's the best public record we can create of Trump's intent was Twitter, and Twitter took that away, and I don't think that was an accident.
I don't think so either. I think that was on purpose. I think it was to prevent, I think it was liability on Twitter side. You know, they don't want to be held accountable and have to go to court and argue why they didn't, why they let Trump incite violence, and are they going to be held accountable for it? I think it was preemptive, you know, lawsuit preventer, because the family of the slain cops, the people that were trampled on the floor, shot in the chest by a cop, may come after these people saying you allowed this content to exist, even though they don't have liability. Potentially they do, and it's just going to be a long, giant clusterfuck of insanity. Twitter's best response is ban the hate, pay out the victims when they come asking for money, and let it go underneath the rug. My point of view, though, from the public perspective, is just yours too. Let them just keep tweeting. Let them paint themselves in a corner. Really, just use it to unmask who the right is. Right. Try to get as many people to agree with Trump as possible, because at the end of the day, that's your map of who you can't trust.
And Twitter arguably allowed Trump to speak for 4 years, and they weren't worried about liability at any point along the way there when he said all of his inane, stupid shit. How about telling people to drink bleach? Like, that arguably got more people killed in the context of COVID deaths than the single digit number of individuals that were killed at the Capitol last one.
Or just as in incompetence and arguments that COVID isn't real. Don't wear a mask. Okay, that's an issue.
Way higher death toll.
Way higher death toll. And that basically at the end of the day means that Twitter's responsible then for all the deaths, because they knew about all the times that Trump was a bad tweeter. They just admitted that they had to remove him because of violence, and yet they didn't remove him earlier when there was just as many deaths as earlier. But I'm pretty sure the prosecutors aren't going to go after him because they have 230. I mean, it would have been great to repeal it and fuck Twitter, fuck Facebook. I mean, Zuckerberg would have lost so much money. Holy shit. There's no ramifications either of Amazon dumping Parler. There's not enough psychopaths on Parler to make a difference in the stock price of Amazon by them dumping him.
None. It's a drop in the bucket.
Yeah, because, you know, large corporations rely on Amazon to do, like, sales every day or monitor their entire, like, proxy service through them, right? Amazon streams Prime literally through their own service. Like, Comcast uses AWS to stream a ton of shit. Like, Parler was so small that it might as well have been a free account because it probably cost more money for them to bring in consultants to help them protect it and scale it up than it would have been beneficial in paid, like, services.
They didn't pay for consultants to scale shit.
That's evident by the fact that they got fucking hacked in like 12 seconds. And the crazy part is that Amazon warns you when you use Amazon services not to open up endpoints to the world. And so does Twilio, which is weird to me because Amazon offers like 50,000 hits or communications on the free package with SES. So I don't know why they would be using fucking Twilio.
Because they're incompetent.
Because they're already within that cloud service. Like, I don't understand why the fuck they wouldn't just route it through there. Capital is going to flex its power whenever it wants to get its way. Like babies throwing a tantrum. There's no way that Section 230 was ever going to be repealed, even if they would have taken the deal, because they need it. And in fact, 230 only helps create and maintain the monopolies, which we already have right now, because there's no accountability for them. They don't have to protect the consumer. They don't have to do any type of content filtering because they're immune to it. And repealing that Section 230 would then force them to be competent providers and actually open up the playing field to other alternatives.
For future episodes and to learn more about the worker movement, join us at workermovement.com.